Hey, it's Brent Smith, and welcome to BSL Insider Radio. Today's guest is Amy Levine. She's a renowned sexologist, sex coach, and certified sexuality educator with over 18 years of experience. And she's the real deal. She has her master's degree in human sexuality from NYU. In the past, she's written a weekly column for Cosmopolitan as the Carnal Counselor. She's been dishing out advice in the past also for Cherry TV, AOL, CNN, Cosmo, as I said, Glamour, Health, Men's Health, Red Book, Self, and on and on and on. And I'll let her tell you the rest of it. But Amy, thanks so much for being here today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And we've also got Jason Troy with us today. Jason, how you doing?
Doing great, as usual. Thanks, Amy, for coming on. We're really excited to have you here and answer questions on sex and just help people inspire and also have them give. Maybe we can just start off and you can tell us from your background and just how you got started in all this, because I think that would be, you know, really interesting for people to hear.
Oh, sure. So it all started back in college, which was quite some time ago, and it was like 1991, I think it was. I had gone to school for interior design. They were phasing out the program. I went to a big liberal arts school, and I just figured if I really wanted to be a designer, I'll go to art school afterwards. So I switched my major. At the time, I had also been taking like a sexuality 101 course, and of course I aced it. Loved going to that class. And I also realized at that time that there was a special program on campus where I could become a peer educator about sexuality, go into the fraternities and sororities and dorms, and that's exactly what I did. So I really just switched my career completely for what I thought. I don't think I ever grew up thinking that I would become a sexuality educator and sex expert and sex coach. And, you know, from there I found out that there would be a program I can go to after college for my master's, and I did that and looked forward to doing that. I should probably say, too, one of the funnier stories about how I actually got into this field is that when I first went to college, I guess I was about sophomore year, people were coming over to me and just, they always knew that I was very open talking about sexuality. My mom's a nurse, so it was always something that was very easily discussed in my home. Nothing was ever taboo on the topic. And what happened was people would ask me questions, and I'd found out that the condoms on campus were breaking. And I was like, wow, that's kind of crazy. And this was like right when, you know, HIV, I think it was actually called GRID and AIDS at that time. It wasn't even really defined as HIV. It was just that turning point. And I went to the health center because I was like, someone's got to say something and figure this out. How are these condoms breaking? There's 40,000 people on this campus. So I went to speak with the woman in charge, and she basically told me that on the consumer reports list that the condoms that they were providing were awesome. You know, they were very high on the list, and because of the bureaucracy, there was nothing that they could do. So I left knowing that I advocated on behalf of all my friends, and also felt a little defeated because I, you know, I wanted to make a difference and, you know, didn't really think that I had the impact that I had hoped to have. The next day I got a call. She had actually hired me and wanted to hire me, but I did take the job to work in the sexual health center, where I then began handing out, you know, condoms and sexual health information. What I then learned when I became a peer educator was why the condoms were breaking. And the main reason was that no one was pinching the tip of the condom, the reservoir tip, to get the to smooth the air out, and they were bursting. So it actually wasn't anything wrong with the condom. It was that they weren't being put on correctly. And, you know, to this day, people in their 20s, 30s, 40s, on up, when I tell them that story, they're shocked because they don't even realize necessarily. Some do, but not everyone realizes that that's a really important part of safer sex.
Huh, and great story.
So, yeah, right?
Sure. Who knew? It's unusual that anyone would even hear that story. That's
yeah. So that's what got me into this field. And I just found it, I was so passionate about it. I was really great at you know, I was always very open-minded and was really able to listen to people's, you know, issues that they were having, or if I didn't know the answer, I was able to look it up and get back to them. And I just found my niche, like this is what I'm great at. And so as the years went on, I did go to NYU. I graduated. I worked at a nonprofit for 10 years, wrote for Cosmo for 3.5, and did a lot of other things along the way. And at some point when life coaching became really big, I realized that I have this very special niche, and I know that there are millions of people out there that need help, that could utilize what I have to offer. And so I basically started as a sex coach. I realized, you know, it wasn't necessarily a field that was out there. I was inspired by someone named Patty Britton, who wrote a book called The Art of Sex Coaching. So that was about 8 years ago. And once I saw that book and realized, well, okay, I really am onto something here. She's doing this. And, you know, she became somewhat of a mentor in that we're both ASEX certified, which is the American Association of Sexuality Educators, Counselors, and Therapists. So I had someone that, even though I didn't know very well, that I was able to model something after based on what I knew was existing in the world. And that was something really cool for me because, you know, there aren't that many people doing what I do. And then from then it just took off. I've been coaching for years now, and I love it. And it's amazing to be able to make such an impact, you know, in people's lives. Because ultimately what I do is inspire people, whether they're single or couple, to become savvy and empowered both in and out of the bedroom. And it's really about being sexually empowered and sexually confident.
Wow. And just so that everyone understands, talk about flow. Talk about the backbone that kind of runs your whole business.
Sure. So what I realized, you know, as I've met with thousands of people, basically, whether it was in person and it was a formal session or it was just people coming up to me or emailing me and then, you know, talking about what their issues are, and the millions of people I've reached, you know, through the web, is that most people live in their head, right? And they're not feeling, they're not in the heart. They might get there sometimes. People sometimes can equate it to kind of being in the zone. I call it flow. But if you're not in that flow space, in that open space, you're stagnant and you're caught and you're in a very set pattern, which doesn't allow for change and growth. And so when you're in the state of flow, which you get to by, you know, doing various grounding activities that are super simple, whether it's part of it, a foundation of what I do is learning how to breathe differently, or even just using breathing techniques at different times depending on when it's needed for whatever the issue is that we're working together on, is that even now, whoever's listening to this, as we're listening to this, think of the way that you're breathing and where your breath is stopping. For most people, when they're inhaling, it's stopping like kind of high on their chest as opposed to a belly breath. And that, in essence, if you catch yourself breathing very high, is the core of probably a lot of stuff that's going on in your life of where you're stuck. And so when you're able to really breathe deep, you're able to experience a much fuller life, just like you're engaging your body in a more full way. So if that is the premise for all that I do, once people learn the basics, I mean, it's not rocket science what I'm doing. I definitely have an expertise that people typically don't have. But a lot of the techniques are things that we utilize every day on an unconscious level, right? We don't think about breathing, but clearly we need to breathe to be alive. And so that's just one of the many ways that facilitates change in our life and our sex life.
That is that's awesome, man, because basically you're talking about, you know, things that transfer over, you know, that aren't compartmentalized in sex, in your sex life, but every part of your life, which is great because we love talking about that stuff. And one thing that you mentioned also is that, you know, if you kind of just, you know, let it go and you're in that flow, things will start happening to you. And I think that we tell people that all the time. Just let go, live your life. You know, here are some things that, you know, some things you can do, obviously, some exercises and so on. But just, you know, let go and things will happen. If you start obsessing about it, you're going to just be fighting against it all the time.
And just as a side note, I think this is just interesting. You know, sometimes people are like, well, how do you figure out, how do you test that? How is that proven to be true? So, I mean, one of the easy things, and this is one of the exercises that I often tell people to do that are kind of very stuck in their head, is I tell them, go to a yoga class, go to a dance class, do something, move your body. Because usually when you move your body, you're just doing things that feel natural to you. You're not thinking. And so when you're in that state of movement, if you come home after that, let's say it's a class or whether you're doing it on your own, whatever it might be, and if you have a solo session, meaning masturbation, or you have sex with a partner, that experience is likely to be more intense than it usually is after a day of work or, you know, first thing in the morning, that type of thing. And the reason is because your body is very open. Mm-hmm. So that's one way you can kind of test out the theory to show that it works.
Nice. I like it. That's great. Well, Amy, I've got a question on here. I think people we need to talk about is really misconceptions and myths around sex that men and women have, because I think a lot of people think things, but they really aren't the correct information, so they build up these stories and these truths around it that cause a lot of, you know, anxiety and angst. So maybe
and there's lots
about
of them.
Yes, everybody has a
yeah.
sex story or story around sex. Now, I know everyone has a sex story, hopefully, but a story around sex that dictates your sex life.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Maybe you can just talk about some of those misconceptions.
Sure.
And kind of
sure. And so I would say that, I mean, there's so many. And so when I think of the more common ones that I hear in my office or even from people that I'm just, you know, casually having conversations with, I mean, they really run the gamut. They cover body image, desire, orgasm, fantasy, sex, pregnancy, STDs. And so what I can do is, do you want me I'll just throw out some that I commonly hear. Does
yeah.
that sound good?
Sure. Sounds good.
All right. So when I hear about or when I think about body image or when I that topic, the things that I commonly hear, and this is mostly women, but it does come from men too, is that, you know, there's always parts of our body that people that we're concerned about. Not for everyone, but for some of us. And actually, many women actually go through this. And so whatever we might find fault with in our own bodies, it's really important to realize that that's not necessarily what the other person is seeing or thinking about you. So so that one is really just about thinking that a partner is going to find faults in body parts that bother you the most. Another one when it comes to body image, and this one is particularly is obviously for men, is that, you know, the bigger the penis, the better. And the reality is that there's only so much that's going to fit inside. And so bigger isn't always better. And quite frankly, no matter what your size is, some I think the important thing is really just being able to be really great at the sex skills that you've learned or to learn sex skills to be able to be well-rounded when it comes to sexuality so that pleasure in more ways than just penetration. When it comes to desire, we often hear that, you know, guys have a higher sex drive. And that could be true. I mean, a lot of men, because they do have more testosterone than women, it tends to be that men have a higher drive, but there are women that have more drive than men. And it's just really important to realize. And I think it's really important to realize, too, if you're a guy that's having a low libido, because a lot of the times it's the lifestyle that can, whether it's stress or other things, whether, you know, things at work, whatever might be going on, problems in your relationship, that can also affect your drive. When it comes to orgasm, everyone thinks that orgasms are supposed to be mind-blowing. And, you know, I think that a lot of the magazines for which I've been quoted in are, you know, guilty of portraying that message. The reality is, though, that I always try to, whenever I do give a quote, is to try to be a little bit broader about it, is that orgasms can be mind-blowing. They're not always going to be more mind-blowing. They can be as simple as a sneeze, like literally, like as quick as an achoo, like as quick as that an orgasm can be over, and it can be earth-shattering on this continuum. So very simple or out of control, right? But usually it's somewhere in between, or it could be at times on either end. The other thing that I hear a lot is that, you know, something is wrong with a woman if she doesn't orgasm from vaginal intercourse. And for this one, I mean, when you think about it, the vagina isn't really, it's definitely sensitive and there's a lot of nerve endings, but particularly the nerve endings are like maybe an inch or so in from the entrance, and then the G-spot is up there too. And there might be other sensitive spots as well, but clitoral pleasure, like basically clitoral stimulation, is really what's going to intensify the vaginal sex experience. So if you're literally just, you know, when we make our little hand gesture indicating, you know, they're screwing or whatever, and we round their two fingers and we stick our other finger inside, when we're doing that, if it's really just that little bit of penetration, or even if our bodies are touching, that alone isn't going to bring a woman to orgasm. The G-spot or the clitoris do need to be engaged typically for most women in order to have an orgasm. And I just think that that's really important. It's not that something's wrong with this person, or maybe not even that you're doing something wrong. If you're doing the clitoral vaginal thing, G-spot thing, you know, that's just one piece of it. That's the physical piece of it. The other piece of an orgasm is where's your head at? Because if your head is involved, your mind is involved, that alone can be making it elusive. And that's just really important to remember as well. When it comes to sex, this one I hear all the time. Everyone thinks that everyone else is having a ton of sex. And that's true for some people, and I think that, you know, when you talk to friends, there's always a few friends that say, oh, my God, my sex life is so crazy, and, you know, we have sex all the time, and she can't get enough, and, you know, we do it everywhere, and, I mean, that might be true for them, but that's not the truth for everyone. And what's important is not to measure what you're doing to what everyone else is doing, and to realize that quality is more important than quantity. And everybody is different. I mean, what if that person that's having sex every day is having, like, sloppy, lousy sex? Do you still want it as much as they're having it? I would imagine that you would probably want it to be, you know, really pleasurable, mutually pleasurable, you know, and even if it's solo sex, to be enjoyable and fun and connected, as opposed to, like, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am type of sex. This one's interesting. I mean, I think, you know, great sex happens naturally is a common myth. I mean, a lot of us, when you think about it, we've learned through trial and error, right? I mean, I guess that could be one of the benefits of having a lot of partners is that you gain more experience. And so the more experience we have, even if it's with the same person, just like with anything in life, practice makes perfect. When we get sex ed when we're younger, if we get sex ed as a kid, you know, we're not learning about how to have sex. We're learning, hopefully, how to communicate and about body parts and things like that. We're not learning the actual physical act. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, whether it's reading books or getting advice from someone who seems to be hopefully knowing what they're doing, porn is not a good way to learn, you know, what is a great way to do things, because oftentimes, as we most of us know, that that's all, like, manufactured and contrived.
A lot of people ask that question, though. They do. Yeah. You get emails on that, too.
I mean, you know, it might give you an idea of what you want things to look like in an encounter, but, or maybe as hot and steamy and that sort of thing. But, you know, I mean, cum shots, sure, you can spray high up to the ceiling, but does that happen all the time? Not really. If it happens every once in a while or once in your lifetime, you know, that might be a lot. Is a woman always begging for more? You know, maybe, but typically, you know, whatever you might learn from porn isn't really what your partner's going to want. And so that's where communication is really important, which we'll probably, I'm hoping, we'll talk about in a little while.
Yeah.
Other stuff that, you know, really is important to realize, I always hear conversations about lubrication, right? That, oh my God, she's not wet enough, she must not be turned on, or you're not turned on because you're not wet. Those types of things, particularly, you know, directed at a woman. And the reality is, lubrication comes and goes throughout an intimate encounter. We're not going to be dripping wet for 45 minutes. It's just not going to happen. We might not be wet in the very beginning, but maybe after a bit of foreplay, you know, they usually say women need about 20 minutes of foreplay, you know, then you might start to see some lubrication. And I guess this, not I guess, but I know, this is something else, and I guess I'll just add it here because it's relevant. Adding lubrication, so whether it's organic or if you want to buy more of the store brands that are advertised all over the place, whatever type of lube you're buying, it's not that you have a problem that you need lube. Lube can actually make sex so much better and actually amazing. And so I think it's awesome to use lube all the time, whether I need it or not. I just think wetter can be better. But it's not, you can't blame a woman because she's not wet enough and equate that to her level of arousal. It's just not fair because our bodies work in various ways, and you know, lubrication is not an indication of a of this high point. It's just that it does. It changes due to hormones and everything else. So just something really important to keep in mind. And again, no shame around needing to or wanting to add extra lube. I get this with a lot of men that I've talked to. It's a bit of a stereotype. I realize that, but I do want to put it out there. You know, I hear these stories, even a lot of women complain about this, is that, you know, their partner thinks that they get in a fight, basically, because their partner thinks that what works for one person, or I should say, what works for other women, because you always want to hear about everyone else your partner's been with, right? But they basically start saying, like, oh, you know, like, this works for everyone else, why isn't it working for you? Something must be wrong with you. And the reality is, well, no, maybe what you're doing isn't necessarily working for everyone else. Women do fake orgasms. Men can fake them too. But that is a factor, so that might not have worked for everyone. And everybody is different. Men, and particularly women, we don't all want to be pleased in the same way. What works for one woman does not necessarily work for everyone else. It can, it's possible, but the best thing is to really communicate about, you know, likes and dislikes and all that stuff so that you actually are getting the pleasure that you want so that it's a satisfying experience. The other thing that I hear quite often is about sex being scheduled. You know, you always hear sex should never be scheduled.
Yeah, totally.
The reality, though, is that some of us, I live in New York City, I know everyone here that I'm friends with, interact with, we all have crazy, hectic lives. And you guys are in major cities, too, so I think you probably can relate. And I'm sure everyone in the audience, too. I mean, people are probably living all over the place. But whether it's moments of crazy lives or just crazy business lives in total, sometimes you have to schedule sex. I mean, there's definitely something to be said for spontaneity. It's awesome when it happens. And, you know, I never would want to take that experience away from someone. But if it's not happening the way that you want it to happen, you got to do something different to make it different, right? So the thing to do different is you might have to put it on your calendar. And you don't have to put in bold letters, like at 11 o'clock at night, have sex. But if you're in a relationship, you know, or even if it's a friends with benefits type thing, whatever it might be, even if it's a solo session, you might want it to be a date night. So whether it's a date night with a partner and kind of see where it leads, or sometimes you got to just do date night for yourself when you're single, whether that means going out to a restaurant.
Date night for yourself.
Taking care of business, you know, it's like we all need that, whether it's a stress relief, whether it's nurturing ourselves, because it is a way of, you know, I mean, there's nothing like loving yourself, right? I mean, it sounds kind of corny, but if you can't love yourself in that way, you can't expect someone else to please you.
In many different ways, that is applicable.
Right?
I think people get really, really attached to the spontaneity thing. It's a fantasy they have, like in a perfect world. Oh, this is how, because, you know, they watch movies and they watch, you know, see TV and they go, oh, well, that's exactly how it's supposed to work. And so if we schedule it, somehow it's less than, it's not as important.
Not sexy, right?
Or we're doing something wrong, or we shouldn't have to do that. We always say that, like, you know, I shouldn't, you know, don't be angry with, you know, there's a thing, there's always going to be a way you wish it was, but if it's not that, then you have to deal with how it is. And if how it is like you just said, then most of the time, if you don't schedule it, it doesn't happen. If that is your lifestyle, then wouldn't you rather schedule it than not ever have sex? I mean, that,
right,
and I don't think people,
right?
Yeah. And I don't think that people think about it that way because they're just busy, right? Like you said, they have busy lives and they go, oh, well, I'll put it off for another day. Oh, we'll talk about it tomorrow. And then of course, 19,000 things happen tomorrow and it's put off another day and another day. And all of a sudden you wake up and you're like, wow, we haven't done anything for like 3 months, 6 months, nine months. So I could see how that could be huge. Everything you're saying is amazing. In fact, if we just stopped right now, everyone listening, you've got a ton of information that has been really incredible, which is why that I haven't been butting in. We've just been kind of until now, of course.
Yeah.
But we've been letting her just, like, you know, just lay it all out there, so to speak, because I think it's fantastic, and I think it's a lot of these top questions that people ask, and if we could just get some clarity on it, you could move forward with your healthy sex life and not obsessing and thinking there's something wrong with you or or thinking that you're less than, or thinking that you have to be some kind of, you know, master of the universe, whether you're a woman or a man, when it comes to the bedroom. And I think we make up all these stories about it. And so anyway, I don't want to stop you. I want you to keep going, but I just wanted to throw in there that this is amazing stuff, everyone. So hopefully you're having some tremendous insights already, taking some notes, and thinking about how a lot of you may be going through these same things and have been wondering all this time, you know, is my thinking on track? Is it off track or whatever? So this is awesome.
I think, too, everyone wants to know that they're quote-unquote normal. I hate the mm-hmm. word normal, but, you know, that's the reality. Is like we don't want to think that something's wrong with us, and usually nothing's wrong with us. But when you start comparing yourself to everyone else or the shoulds or the expectations of what you see in the movies and, you know, in magazines and on the billboards and things like that, it can make us feel less adequate if we let it. The trick is to be really empowered and confident so that it doesn't affect us in that way. And it just encourages us to be better people, to do more, to seek out the answers, and to get the help in a proactive way to be, you know, change makers of our own lives.
Yeah, and I think that for people who are have very, very little experience or even no experience in the sex department, it can be debilitating.
Absolutely.
Right? So all these the story they've told themselves about it, which they have, you know, received from outside sources, can just delay and stop what could be a fantastic, healthy sex life, but they have built it up and they have their fear around it and story and so on, and it really is standing in their way. So I'm glad we're clearing a bunch of stuff up today.
And I do think those stories, once you can identify what this is another piece of my work, is that once you identify that story, it's rewriting the script. And once you rewrite the script, a lot of those feelings will just kind of fall away on their own. Mm. So, you know, everyone, I think there's some people that are very interested in change, and those are the people that I work with, is the ones that are ready to make a shift. If you're not
committed.
Ready to make it, if you're not committed, I can't help you. I'm not doing all the work. I do 110% of my part, and if my clients aren't ready to step up before we work together, I literally will give them a referral.
Huh.
You know,
do
before
the same
they become
kind of
my
thing.
Client.
We
because
feel the
I just,
same.
I want my
walk
job.
Walk them to the door. You know, but you can't put you, and you could give them a little boost through, but they have to walk through the door. They have to be committed. They have to walk through.
And I will always take the time to listen to someone's stuff. But when it comes to taking on clients, you know, I want my job to be fun too. And I want my clients to be able to experience that shift. And rather than walking away deflated, if I were just to take everyone on that had a complaint, like, it just would be it just doesn't seem like gratifying work to me in that way. It's the light bulb when you have those aha moments with your clients and you see that in your clients and you see when they walked in and they set goals and where they are even a week later, let alone a few months later, depending on how long the program is. It's huge, and it truly is life-changing, and I love it. It's just such
an amazing
experience to have that with my clients.
Good to love what you do. And,
it's so important.
Yeah, it is. It is. And something just keeps sticking in my head about what you said about story, since we talk about it all the time. It's like the basis of a lot of stuff we do. And someone yesterday we were talking, you said your story isn't about who you are. Your story creates who you are. So very powerful, right? I mean,
it is.
And around sex, I mean, and what you just said about that right just before was powerful as well.
Yep. I mean, I think, too, we all have these patterns that if we do take the time, or for those of us, and I think most of the people that are listening to this now are those people because they found the Brent Smith lifestyle, right? So knowing that they want that change to happen is the first step. You know, just seeking out, being proactive, and even just having that interest is the very first step in all of this, in the whole process of change. You know, it's a step at a time. And when we look at the patterns, and if we want to undo that story, basically, we want to have a new story that creates the sex life, in this case, of what you want. And once you do, I mean, there's no way it's not going to change. It has to change because you've changed. Even by putting words on paper, you know, I think it's one thing to say things verbally. There's something about making it permanent on paper, or for some people, the computer. But I've also, you know, heard when people actually, I've experienced this with my clients, when they actually physically write it on paper, the old school way, it's actually even more powerful because somehow the computer, as much as it's, you know, has become a everyday part of our lives to be typing, whether it's our phone or our computers or whatever, iPads, it's still in this virtual world when it's digital.
Mm. And I think that I want to touch on one more thing on that, is that when you said that when you write it down, you change your story or rewrite it, as you said, that as you're doing it, you will somehow let go of some of those feelings or change your emotion around it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's very important to talk about. And everyone listening, this is a critical, this should be an aha moment for you. The moment that you realize that concept of creating and in creation, and that you can create a new life, whether it be, you know, any part of your life, sex or whatever, but that you're always searching for, oh, it's got some outside source is going to help me change my emotion, or, you know, yeah, but you have to understand that if you take responsibility and you understand this idea of creation, that just simply writing something down, and rewriting something, a new story, thinking a new story, and verbalizing it too, I think they're all important. The thing about writing was very powerful that you just said. That is the moment when things change. And you can do that on your own right now. You could do that by yourself with no other outside help other than just us bringing it to your awareness that you're powerful enough to create that right now. So I think that creation thing is really important to remember, just the act of doing that. So anyway, just wanted to retouch
on that. No, I think that's so important. I love giving action steps. And I love that you took the time to do that, Brent. So important, and like you said, so easy for everyone to do right now, and to or make yourself a note while you're listening to this to do it as soon as the podcast is over, because it can be huge change for your life by just making that one first step. And it's a pretty simple one. It doesn't have to be like this multi-page journaling activity. I mean, that's great if it is, because the more detailed, the better. Because you're manifesting essentially what you want, right? You don't necessarily have it yet, but you're putting it out there to the universe, saying, you know, this is what I want for my sex life. And of course, you can do it for other aspects of your life as well. The irony is, you know, I always say this. Yes, I focus on sexuality with my clients, but in sessions, you'd be surprised how much of regular lifestyle stuff comes up. Because if that foundation of their life isn't solid, or until that's solid, that's when we can work on the sex stuff. I mean, we do work on the sex stuff from the beginning, but then once we're talking, we realize that work and other relationships with parents and all of these things ultimately do affect our sex life, as crazy as it, you know, may sound.
So we agree, and we talk about it all the time. And in fact, it was one of the things that kind of organically led me to move in my practice and my programs and my business from dating and relationships, which is where it started, to more personal growth of every kind in whole life, because it just kept coming up over and over and over again, and it was all connected. And Jason and I talk about this all the time with our people, that, you know, they tend to want to compartmentalize it. Well, my problem is in the sex department. My problem is with women. My problem is with men. My problem is with my career. But it's an overall problem. And they want to compartmentalize it, but it's really, since their life is all connected, it's a life problem. It's a life issue, life opportunity.
Mm-hmm. It is.
What do you think about all this, Jason?
Yeah, no, I think it's definitely true. I think, you know, again, the stories we tell ourselves is what happens in our lives, because remember, we're always telling ourselves these things over and over and over again. You know, that tens of thousands of times a day, we're creating our identity and solidifying it. And so the great thing about that is that you have the power then to change her, because your current identity was created by you. So that's powerful, because now you can create a new identity and you can have a fantastic sex life, and just you start changing your words, your thoughts, the language, how you communicate with other people around it. And in fact, when you start doing that, every part of your life is going to be significantly better. And it always happens like that. And so you have to kind of treat it as an overall issue. Otherwise, it won't work. Otherwise, typically what people are doing is they're teaching you tips and techniques that may give you a little short-term gain, but it really doesn't help you. And it actually leads you farther down the road of not being where you want to be. So,
yes, I agree completely. Completely.
Yeah. So why don't you talk about communication? Because I think that's another place where people, I think a lot of myths or misconceptions around, you know, people communicating, the advantages of that, kind of the myths, like, can I really tell someone? I don't know what's going on, and all this other issues around it, I think people would be really interested in hearing.
Sure. So when you think about communication, I mean, you think about all the people that we interact with on a daily basis. If you're dating, what that situation is, the people that you might be seeing, if you're in a relationship, you know, with your partner, we give off both verbal and nonverbal cues, right? And so people think, oh, it's, you know, it's really just about what you say, but what you do and how you act is as important. And so a lot of my work, and even especially when I work with couples and I see how they interact together, it's really just catching them when they're actually doing what they're doing, which is the problem, to help them correct that and really get used to, because they've basically, you know, we've fallen into old patterns with certain things. And so we just want to make sure that we're able to instill a change in that, to be able to be more open with each other, to be more authentic with each other, more honest with each other. And, you know, doing that in the relationship dating department, or probably dating and then relationship is usually how the order goes, but, you know, in all of that, you know, really deciding how much you want to be you. And I think even for me, when I think about, I'm married now, but when I think about my dating experiences, I had a lot of fun being single and dating. And, you know, every relationship is different. People communicate in different ways. We learn a lot from our relationships growing up. So whether it was our parents or maybe our parents' friends or now our friends' relationships, and just observing how they are and communicating with each other. And I think that what's really important to keep in mind is that when we look back, particularly on how we were raised, that's usually the catalyst for how we are now. And so it's sort of the legacy, right? So if your parents were very communicative and very open, likely you've learned that and you've taken that and either incorporated because into your life because it works, you've seen it work, or for whatever reason, maybe you've tweaked it based on how they communicated with each other, you realize like, oh, okay, you know, I want to do it differently. And this all takes a certain level of awareness. I think for the most part what happens is that, especially with the divorce rate being so high, and, you know, communication being an issue for so many people, is that we never really had a good role model for what a relationship would look like, what communication could look like on a healthy level. And so as adults, we now need to learn how to do that and what that looks like. And there's no right or, well, I shouldn't say there's, I'm going to say there's no right or wrong answer, but I guess a better way of putting it is, you know, when you really think about the relationship that you want and how you want to communicate, like what you want that to look like, that's how you're able to achieve it. You know, and you can go back again to writing that out, as we talked about, writing what you want for your sex life. You can also do this for the relationship that you want, and you can use it, you know, in, for your sex life, but you can also use it in business, with friends, etc. I mean, all of this stuff is tips and techniques that you can learn to make life changes in all aspects of your life, essentially. And
yep.
So
how do you like, I guess, question, so if you're with someone else and you want to communicate, like, I mean, just, I think people would be interested, how would you approach someone and talk about, you know, anything that's on your mind, or like you're worried, or you're, you know, because a lot of people have fears and worries that, wow, I don't want to talk to someone about this because it may look like I don't know what I'm doing, look like I'm inadequate. I mean, you know,
I'm curious. So I don't like to be negative, but in this, and I'm not going to be negative with this, but here's the negative flip of how to deal with it. If you have something that you want to share and you're afraid to put yourself out there, right, because of fear, judgment, whatever it might be, think about what the worst thing is going to happen, really. I mean, when you think worst-case scenario in those terms, it's usually not that bad. I mean, God forbid it's a situation where it's, you know, an abusive situation or something like that and your life is on the line. That's a very different situation, and you probably have to, you know, deal with that in a very different way. But on a general day-to-day level of communication, you know, if I even think about, just pick up, you know, things that when I even get quoted for articles and whatnot, you know, something common that always comes up is like, okay, you know, sexually transmitted diseases are pretty common, right? Especially when you're single, it can happen in a relationship too. But it's a calculated risk to be with someone on a physical level. It just is. Most of us just take that calculated risk. However, sometimes one of the biggest conversations you need to have is talking about, you know, and just being honest about STDs. So even in something like that, that could, what's the worst case scenario? Well, the other person might not want to be with you anymore, right? I mean, do you guys see what other situations can you think of, or what other outcomes can you think of in that situation? To me, that's the worst case scenario. Or maybe she tells other people that you've confessed to having whatever, right?
Totally. Yes.
I mean, so those are two very real things that could happen. So I don't want to minimize that in any way. But it's also important to be very honest, because in the flip side, you can think of it this way. What if your partner had whatever and they weren't telling you? Wouldn't you want to know? So when you kind of flip it too, well, wouldn't I want the person to be able to tell me this if the situation was reversed? Sometimes that can make it a little bit easier. And then the question is, well, how do you go about bringing up topic X, right? Whatever it might be. So in the STD conversation, just as an example, because that's probably one of the hardest things in dealing with people's sex lives, that I can think of, because it's not a fun topic to talk about, but it's a very real thing, and most of us, you know, we know of a lot of other people that have been in that situation, and some people just choose not to get tested or are convinced themselves that it happened a long time ago, that whatever they got, they got. And if it was bacterial, like chlamydia, for example, you know, sure, you can pop a pill. But if it's something like herpes, which cold sores, just as a PS, is a form of herpes, and, you know, can be, I'm just kind of throwing this out of left field, but it's just really important to recognize if we're having this conversation, is that when someone has a cold sore, which is super common, right? I mean, on any given day, I mean, I live in New York City, so the probability is increased, but I always see people with cold sores. Because I'm dealing with a mass amount of people, I think it's like 1 in 4 or 1 in 5 people that have herpes. So basically, if someone has a cold sore on their lip or has that feeling before it comes out, then it actually can be transmitted genitally if that person were to have oral sex and, you know, give oral sex to their partner. So just because of where it is, it's still the virus. There's two types, but it still can go on your mouth or on your genitals. It just depends. It's skin-to-skin contact. So wherever that skin touches is what's going to be infected. So, or it has a higher probability of being infected. So, you know, these are things that are important to discuss, if anything, just to be able to practice safer sex methods. So, okay, so let's say person A has herpes and they need to talk with their partner about it. Usually it's best to bring it up when you're not in a sexual situation, right? So whether you're just hanging out on the couch, or I know to do like flipping through magazines, I'm not sure if I've seen, I think there used to be like Abreva commercials. I don't know that I've seen any lately. But using the media as a spark for conversations that are difficult to talk about makes it a lot easier, regardless of the topic. So not necessarily that you want to wait until that commercial comes on, but if you notice in a magazine there's an ad, you might, if it's really hard for you just to bring up the topic and just sit someone down and just say, like, look, I really care about you. You know, we never really talked about STDs, and I really just want to have an honest conversation. And you don't even have to necessarily fess up first about yourself. You can just say, you know, I'm just wondering, you know, what your, you know, experience is with STDs. You know, what have you had in the past? Because you don't want to do it as a yes. You don't want to do any conversation as a yes and a no. That's difficult. You don't want to have a closed-ended statement. Because then it's like, no, yes. And then where does that leave you? But if they're like, oh, I've never had anything that I know of, or, oh, actually, I had chlamydia 6 years ago, or, oh, yeah, my pap smear just came back, and, you know, I have HPV. It just, that's just the, you want to open the door to the conversation. And it, then it just makes it a lot easier. They are still difficult conversations to have, but it's just, it's easier to navigate. And at that point, after that person shared, or as you're having this mutual organic conversation, even though it was a little contrived and that you knew you wanted to bring it up, at that point you can say, look, I really care about you. I just really want to be honest. You know, I do, I've had herpes in the past, and then you can kind of explain your particular situation. You know, I get them on my, I get cold sores every once in a while. I've never noticed it anywhere else in my body, or I have genital herpes, or I have, I take, you know, suppressant medication, and I haven't take, I haven't had an outbreak in years. It doesn't mean that the virus isn't active still. It's still possible to transmit, but it definitely, the medication can definitely lower it. And a lot of times it's just a matter of being more well-informed as a couple, or as you're entering this relationship together. You just want people to make consensual choices to be together, really. I mean, what about HIV when you think about that, right? That's an easy thing to test for, blood test, right? I, and I also think when we're talking about STDs, just something else that I want to point out. These aren't fun conversations, like I said, to have, but even just from an expert point of view, I just want to put the information out there. People always say, like, oh, you know, I've been tested for everything. Well, the reality is you can't test for everything, particularly in men. So, for example, unless a guy has a wart, HPV wart, basically, on their skin somewhere, and usually it would be on their penis or on their thighs or around their rectum maybe, unless there's that outbreak and it's visible to be tested, it's usually not detectable. So there's a lot of things that are symptomless but can still be transmitted. For women, too, we have, we get certain things that, you know, are symptomless as well. And so, you know, it's just really important to, the CDC has a, the Centers for Disease Control has a hotline, and like it's like an 800 or an 888 number. If you go on their website, I think it might even just be CDC info, and then if you just Google that, you'll find the rest of the number. They have an STD hotline, so you can find all the nuances about every STD there. The other thing to really keep, to really important to keep in mind, if there's a window period after exposure. So, sure, you might have been tested 2 weeks ago, but if you were hooking up all this week, you're still at risk again, or your partner, your current partner is at risk. So it's just a very gray area. The important thing is just to be as safe as you can and as responsible. I mean, talk about personal awareness and responsibility, right? Being responsible about your own sexual health, even for your own health purposes, in addition to that of your partner. So that's just my PSA for the day.
well, that's good stuff to know. And you know, and there are some people who don't like to talk about it or don't like to even hear about it, but it's very important. You gotta push through it and, you know, understand about it and be as responsible as you can be. So I think it's good information to have out there.
So just to summarize the communication, I would just say, regardless of the topic, find a time that's the optimal time to talk. You also don't want to talk when the other person that you want to receive, that's receiving the conversation, even though you'll be interacting fully with each other, you don't want to spring it on them when they're about to have a big business meeting or, you know, whatever it might be. You want to find a really good time where they're going to be open and be engaged in the conversation. You can use outside materials like a magazine, TV show, movie, whatever, to be a teachable moment and utilize that to start the conversation, like, hey, what do you think of this? And that could even be done for something fun that you want to try. Like, let's say you've never fantasized before or shared fantasies, let's say, and maybe you're looking in a, you know, pop culture magazine and it's like this huge article on, you know, 10 tips to share fantasies with your partner. I mean, read it together and then you can kind of have your own dialogue about, like, oh, yeah, this is what turns me on. You know, there's just simpler ways to be able to share, like, the difficult stuff, but also the really fun stuff, too, if you're not sure how to bring it up.
Another question on communication. So we get this question from people, especially people who don't have that much experience to draw on or maybe have no experiences to draw on, you know, and you meet someone or you're interacting and then you first have your first you know, sexual experience with that person, and how do you communicate? Can you, you know, how do you do that without, you know, looking poorly? Or a lot of people have all these excuses in their head. I think it's a lot of anxiety, and therefore then they don't want to engage in sex at all because they're just so fearful of what's going to happen and all these outcomes at that point in doing it. How can people, like, even in the moment, sort of communicate or with the other person?
So how, I'm sorry, just how can they communicate? Can you just repeat?
Communicate with
in
someone
the moment,
else.
I got that. In the moment,
yeah, in the moment.
Like their wants and desires?
Yeah.
Well, is it their wants and desires or the fact that they're inexperienced?
I think both.
All of that.
Because
yeah.
I think,
okay.
Yeah.
So this is something.
If they don't know what to do, like, I don't know where to go from here. Is that what you're saying?
Sure. Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
And or I want to do something, but I don't know how to do it, or I don't know what you're talking about when you tell me what you want to do. I mean, I can see how that could be a very, very tough conversation to have, and very fearful for an inexperienced person, or someone who's just afraid to talk about stuff.
Let me just preface this too, because I find this fascinating and just so important, is that, so I live in New York City, right? And so there's, you know, all types of people here of all different levels of experience, but I think that the myth is that everyone is so sexually experienced, you know, in New York and L.A. and, you know, these very big cities. And the reality is a good portion of my clients are very inexperienced. They're in their 30s, they're in their 40s, they're in their 50s. They might still be virgins. They might be what they would consider to be sexual inexperience because they've never, you know, really had more than one partner, or they've been married and they only had one partner, and maybe they're divorced or they're widowed, whatever the situation might be. So I also just want to recognize that it's okay if you're inexperienced. We all need to start. We were all inexperienced at some time, and don't let your age be a factor. Don't let that hold you back. So talk about, again, rewrite your script so that you're empowered by it and looking forward to, you know, having these experiences to become more experienced. And that all doesn't need to be done necessarily physically in an unhealthy way. That's not what we want to happen. We want it to be done in a healthy way. So when you're inexperienced and you want to, let's say you're in a dating situation and you want to convey to your partner where you're at, or you're not sure what to do, I mean, sure, you could fess up to that, similar to what we were just talking about before, finding a good time to talk, and literally just say, like, look, you know, I really like you. I don't really know how to say this, right? We can all be really honest about where we're at. It's very healthy to do, very authentic. Look, I don't know how to say this, but it's just, I really just feel like it'll make our relationship more connected if I really just share with you where I'm at, and this is where I'm at. Truth be told, I haven't really had experience, or I haven't really had that much physical experience. I've never had sex. I've only had sex once. Whatever the situation, I've never given a blowjob. I've never gone down on a girl. I don't know where the G-spot is. Whatever the situation might be, is really just to be able to be honest about it. So, again, just to be able to have those conversations outside of the bedroom. If you're in a situation where you're being physical, like let's say you muster up the courage to hook up with someone or to go on a date, and you're, you know, after the date, you, or maybe it's the third date and or more, and you've decided that you really want to, you know, go upstairs and really have this physical encounter wherever it may lead, even if it's something very simple and that's something that you haven't necessarily done before. You could wing it and see where it goes. And then in the moment, this is a great way to be able to, what's the right words of saying this? I would never want you to hide your inexperience, but here's a great way to be empowered by your lack of experience. You don't need to fess up to it per se, but you can just simply say, show me how I can please you the most, or show me what you like. Because if the partner is showing you what they like, it goes back to that myth I mentioned earlier about, you know, one person thinking that whatever their skills are, they're keeping it the same for every partner they're with. We know that that's not true. And so even if you were experienced, it's important to find out what your partner likes. Same thing if you're inexperienced. Just show me what you like, or tell me how you want to be touched. Right? That's a very in-the-moment, direct message to give you exactly what you need to do. Sure, you
powerful.
Might, and she might say, or he might say, you know, move your hand this way or do it this way, and you might not be used to that hand coordination, so it might be a little bit awkward.
Yep.
So be it. if it's awkward, it's awkward. It can be awkward even for the most experienced person, because the reality is that we all have different sex drives. We all have different levels of expertise and experience in the sack, so to speak. And, you know, we all just have different ways of doing things. And
yeah.
We can't just expect that it's the same for everyone.
That's
That's a situation. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. That's a situation where if you get out of your head and don't let the anxiety take over, but if you're in a state of flow, being in the moment, and you're just asking general questions like you would do anywhere else you were in your life, right? If you needed to find out where the post office was, you would ask someone on the street, you know, well, can you tell me where the post office is? You know, can you tell me what pleases you? Is this what happens? You know, tell me how you want to be touched. It's just the words are slightly changed, but you're still needing direction, right?
Yeah, super powerful. You know, I've been giving that same kind of advice for years, because the guys will always, you know, guys used to always ask me, you know, oh, I'm in the moment, I'm inexperienced, what do I do? I say, you tell them, you ask them a couple questions, you say, what do you like? So you don't have to fess up necessarily, like you just said, which is, I think, great. And if you don't know what she's talking about, just say, show me. And I said, actually, what you are afraid of is you're afraid that, you know, all these, there's these guys who are somehow sex gods and they're really experienced and they know more. But I'm telling you from what I know about people is that the guys who think they know the most never ask those questions. And in fact, she will love the fact that you ask those questions because no one ever does. So whether you're experienced or not experienced, she never gets to ask that question. It's always about, you know, a lot of times it's about the guy rather than about, you know, about the girl. So at least in that situation. So, yeah, right on with that advice. I like that advice because same thing.
Just to go back to what you said earlier, Brent, about the story creates who you are that someone had said, whether it was yesterday or what you recently heard, it's the same thing. If you have in your mind that you're really inexperienced and you're letting that take a toll on your self-esteem, basically, you're going to come off as, like, completely powerless, right? Or, like, that's when it becomes an issue, that lack. No one wants to be with someone who has low confidence, right? It's just it not that I shouldn't say no one wants to be, but, it, you know, you have the power within you, we all do, to be able to take a situation like this one. I'm not very experienced, but we don't have to live that story. And so if you're in those situations, so about not fessing up, it's really not about, it is about not fessing up, but it's not in the trying to be secretive way. It's that I don't need to let my experience be a negative impact because I can show this person that, you know, I'm just being authentic and doing my thing. And I can, and by asking them questions and engaging them, like what you're saying, which they're not necessarily used to, which is awesome. And there's that, you know, there's that interaction between the two of you. That's what matters most, not where you've been and what experience you haven't had. It's, well, what can you do for me now? You know?
Yeah, not where you've been, it's where you're going.
Exactly.
Really.
That's
it.
Awesome.
And, yeah, you know, that's super powerful. Love it. Cool.
You got a question to ask you about giving, helping, and inspiring, because it's something that we talk about all the time. And so I just wanted to talk about the role of giving and being, I guess, you know, generous in sex, because I just saw an article in the Huffington Post. It was about people that are more giving unconditionally with sex have much more sex in their relationships than people who don't, which sort of seems kind of a little obvious. But, I mean, I just love for you to touch on that and talk about that.
Sure. So I do think the role of giving and being generous is so important, right? It's something that we all agree on, the three of us, and I'm sure others out there listening are living their life that way as well. I do think that, you know, it's important to give pleasure to a partner as well as ourselves. It's very important to keep in mind and to really think about sex in a state of flow and how it can satisfy many of our needs. And it can be a need of connection, interaction, vulnerability, love, emotional availability, right? Human needs. It can satisfy all of that. But I do think there's a little bit of a danger zone in the idea of giving too much. And it's a boundary. And here's what it is. When you think about, and I see this all the time too, in people that I work with, but also people that I know, there are certain people that only give. Now, what's interesting is the reason why they always give is they have a hard time receiving. And so in those situations, that's not completely healthy. So what's really important is that you're giving and getting. Does that make sense?
Giving and receiving.
Yes. Yep. Oh, sorry, giving and receiving, yes.
Well, you know what? Interesting that I want to explore this real quick, because we talk about it in a different context. We talk about, you know, be careful if, you know, a lot of people say, oh, yeah, I want to give, and maybe not in sex, but we're talking about it more generally usually. I want to give, but most people want to give in order to get, in order to receive, not give unconditionally to give.
Sure.
What you're talking about is something different. It's a more healthy giving and receiving. And one thing that Jason and I we're talking about lately, exploring it as the next level for a lot of our people, is the art of receiving. Because what does happen when you do give unconditionally and without, you know, being worried about getting, and not only to get, right? So I hope everyone's following me here. Is that you will receive. You will inevitably receive. And much more than when you were giving to get, you will receive like an avalanche. And so then some people have issues with that, the art of receiving. So I just wanted to kind of point that out, everyone listening, especially people who are kind of listen to what we're saying, that when you say it's important to get, it's important to be open to receiving, is what you're saying, right? As part of your giving. Okay.
Yes, absolutely. Cool. Thank you very much. Because I think that there's a lot of people, or a lot of people that I encounter, what I find is that one partner in a partner situation, one is very interested in giving, but they have a really hard time when that giving is focused on them, which is why they're giving so much. But yes, I do believe in giving unconditionally, and not.
But they're over giving to put off their fear of receiving. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Exactly.
Wow. Nice. I mean, it's interesting.
So that's
concept,
just the whole twist on all of this. So I just went directly to the crux of it. But yeah, you're absolutely right. So yes, it is giving unconditionally. That's very different than what I was just saying. But both, you know, important points too.
Oh, but I could see how that could be an issue.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
And if you're overcompensating for a fear that you have, obviously that's not healthy. And that you do need to focus on the receiving and being able to receive.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'd love to give tips for better sex if you guys want to hear them.
Do that. Let's go there. Get it.
Okay. So I'm just going to bullet these out, because I think that when you hear a podcast, sometimes it all becomes too much information, but lots of good information. So I'm just going to keep this part super simple.
Okay.
That listeners can delve into after, because they're that straightforward. So these are more of even just reminder tips of things to do and some new things that we didn't get to talk about yet. So the first tip is to really know what you like. So whether it's solo sex, helping you figure it out, if you're doing it through mutual masturbation, just really being aware of what turns you on, because I really just feel that if you don't know what turns you on, you can't expect someone else to do that for you. You can't expect them to discover all your hot spots. Sure, they can in a fun way, absolutely, but better that you know what they are yourself. So know what you like. The second one we talked about earlier is to communicate, and that verbal and nonverbal cues are equally as important. The third one is to increase your dopamine, and this one we did not get to talk about. But when you think about relationships and when you're first dating someone, and all that excitement and the butterflies and that kind of high that you're on, the natural high, it's because your dopamine is kicking. And so when you're in a long-term relationship, that dopamine level is nowhere near where it was in the beginning. So one of the ways to get it back is to do things together, you know, really that are novel, but maybe they're even on your must-do-before-you-die list, you know, things that you just absolutely want to try. And to do that with your partner just makes it that much more fun. You know, it could be skydiving. It doesn't have to be. It could be having a picnic in a park. It could be exploring a new area in your town or your city each week or month. It could be cooking a new recipe together. Whatever it is, it doesn't have to be totally physically intimate sexually. It could be. I mean, maybe you want to try a new toy or experience a new sexual behavior activity that you haven't, maybe you haven't tried bondage before and it's something that you want to check out. It could be any of those things, but it's really fun and important to do. The next thing is to fool around. I think that when couples, and even in dating relationships at a certain point, people just start having sex all the time, and they forget about how fun it was to really just explore each other's bodies, to take their time, to be sensual, to, you know, even just have the sexual experience culminate in whether it's oral sex or just a crazy makeout session where you're dry humping each other and, you know, kind of coming in your pants. I mean, that could be really fun too. It's not something that we often do, but when it does happen, you know, and maybe that's been after the fact and it happens in your pants, and then that's another conversation where communication becomes really important because you might be embarrassed. But whatever the situation right. might be, I mean, if it's that hot, it can actually be fun, and hopefully if you have a change of pants for the guy, you know, it's just an easy fix. But, you know, it could be really fun to just remember what it's like to kind of make out and take things really slow and simple. Another thing is to indulge the senses, and I think that people forget this as well. Sure, touch is involved when you're intimately, physically involved with someone else, but also to think about the sight, the sound, the taste, and the smells that are going on around you, and so, or even on the body. So maybe it's candles, music, perfume. Maybe it's an amazing wine that you took, you know, that you've had for years, or a crazy bottle of champagne, whatever it might be. You know, maybe you're using brand new sheets. Maybe she's wearing this really beautiful silk chemise. Whatever it might be, the more, not that you have to do everything at once, but as you're infusing these indulging of the senses into your sexual activity, it really can elevate and heighten the experience. Being in a state of flow, we talked about earlier. So again, like I love being able to tell people, even in sessions, to experience that state of flow by going to yoga, taking a dance class, doing something that, whatever it might be, to kind of get you in that zone where you're out of your head, where you're in your heart, and then to come home afterwards, or if you're doing something, you know, at home, you know, as soon as you're done, really just to be able to engage in, whether it's masturbation if you're alone, or if, because I want single people to have fun too. It's not that you always have to have a partner to experience pleasure. And if you're coupled, you know, go have sex as soon as you get home, or, you know, if you have a car, maybe you even have sex in the car after yoga class, whatever it might be. But your body's open at that point, and that's the reason why it's very incredible and powerful to do it at that point in time. Three more for you. One is to have, or another one, I should say, is to have a pleasure box of quality props. So things like lube. Oh, and actually just a tip about another PSA about lube and condoms. So you want to have contraception in that box, latex condoms if you want to prevent sexually transmitted diseases, or I should say reduce the risk of STDs. Lambskin condoms, while they might feel great, are actually porous, so while sperm can't get through, HIV and other viruses can. So I would avoid using lambskin unless you're sure you're in a monogamous relationship and you only want to protect against pregnancy. And when using lube with latex, you only want to use water-based or silicone-based lube. Oil can actually cause the condom to deteriorate if it's latex, so you always want to stay away from oil-based lube. So to have your lube of choice in that pleasure prop box, you can have a blindfold in there, you can have some sort of a G-spot toy. I love the little bullets, those little toys that easily fit between two people. That's always fun. She can just use it, hold it on her clit, or you clitoris, or you can clit for short, and or you can just slip it between the two of you in various positions. You know, bondage tape is super fun. I don't know if you guys have tried that yet, but there's bondage tape that's made out of PVC, and so it actually sticks to itself, but it also unsticks very easily, so it's not like a regular tape. It's awesome. I have a lot of these toys on my website, so if everyone...
I suppose you'll be sending us samples.
Oh, that would be awesome, right? Get some sponsorship.
Exactly.
Well, maybe I'll be able to figure something out with that. You never know. I'll see. If not, I always I try to have little contests and stuff on my site. So be sure to check out Ignite Your Pleasure, and I do occasionally give out my favorite toys. Not ones that are used, of course, brand new ones. So you want to have a pleasure prop box. And then two more things, or rather three more things. Erotic talk could be really powerful. And just a word about that. You don't want to just blurt out something raunchy. You can, again, like we had talked about the person that was an experience and what they say, if you're not sure how to talk erotically, you can literally just kind of give words and share what you're doing to the other person. So, you know, you can just say, I love stroking your cock, or it feels so good to, feel your, or it feels so good to rub your clit. You know, whatever it might be, you don't have to come up with these crazy things out of the blue. That you have to have anxiety over about what to say next. Just explain what you're doing in a sexy tone. That's usually the easiest way to do it. And if you're not even comfortable saying certain words like vulva, vagina, penis, clitoris, then do it in front of a mirror before, you know, when you're alone, and just say penis, 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 penis until you can laugh through it. And then at one point it'll just become more natural and it'll be easier to say when you're actually with your partner. Or vagina, 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 whatever it might be. And then fantasy and role play has a really important part in all of this, too, in making sex better. And I think that, you know, people really do think that with fantasy that it's unhealthy, too, or it's something that they don't want to do, that it's kind of being like backstabbing in a way to their partner if they're fantasizing about someone else or something else and they don't want to do that to their partner. But the reality is that a fantasy can really just be a split-second image, sound in your head, you know, whatever it might be, remembering an old experience, creating something in your mind that you want to try. And sometimes when you're thinking about that, even as you're increasing your arousal or at the peak of orgasm, it truly can elevate your experience and actually intensify your orgasm. So that's something you can try. But I do think people have a difficult time. Either they don't know
that's
how to fantasize, and that becomes
an
issue, or they're worried that they're being disrespectful to their partner.
Totally.
But I think, too, if you even having an open conversation back to communication about fantasy, well, what turns you on? Or this is what I like. And if you even talk about, you know, fantasy, like just knowing that it's healthy to fantasize and it has nothing to do with not being turned on by their partner, but it's just elevating the experience in a different way. It might even just be about your partner that you're currently with, but maybe you're thinking about a previous experience or something hot that, you know, maybe you haven't done anal, but you really want to try it. And maybe when during sex, you're actually, maybe vaginal sex, you're actually thinking about being inside her anus, for example. You know, it could be things like that. You know, it doesn't have to be that you're thinking about the porn star that you watched on the internet last night. it could be about your own partner, or about yourself for that matter. And role play is just another way to, you know, switch it up a little bit. You could dress in costume. You don't have to be. You can pretend there's a third person in the room. You can, you know, some people do the officer and person that's arrested, whatever it might be.
You could you could have a third person as a surprise guest in the room.
You could do that too. Just make sure you talk about that first.
I always go to the next level.
For some people, that is something that they are thinking about trying, and that has its own level of negotiation and communication and conversation, right?
Yep,
exactly. So those are my quick tips on
Wow.
How to have better sex, basically.
That's
that's basically the fun of it. You know, I think the biggest thing is really just to get out of the get out of your mind, get into a state of flow, communicate, and just have a great time. And don't put any pressure on yourself. I mean, I think that anxieties and stress and judgment really sabotage sex lives, and it's really just boils down to the core of just being sexually empowered and confident, and that's a big part of my work.
Wow!
And how I help people transform their lives.
And like transformation, there you have it, everybody.
Wow, that's info. Thanks, Amy. This has been tremendous. There's so much information. I think people have to listen to this several times to get it all.
Many, many, many times. Yeah, we packed it
many
today.
There's
so much in there.
Which is awesome. It is. Well, Brent, do you have anything else?
No, I'm you know, I'm going to write out my list of fantasies and stuff like that right now. But other than that, you know,
with something
and if there are any left that I haven't tried, I'm trying to actually spend most of my time thinking of that. But anyhow, I'm just kidding around. So listen, Amy, thanks so much for being here. Really appreciate it. And I know that all of you out there have learned a lot today. Probably got some tremendous insights, especially since this is a topic that a lot of people avoid talking about or don't talk about or avoid listening to even. And the important thing, as always, is if you have some insights on this and some aha moments, take action on them right away. And anything that you heard that you found that was new to you or something that was incredible, take action or else, you know, you won't. So the longer you put it off, more likely it is that it won't happen. Put it on your schedule, as Amy would say. Schedule it, and, you know, this is great. I'm going to take action on this tomorrow, tonight, whenever, but make it soon. So we hope you got a lot out of that. Amy, where can people find out more about you?
Well, my website is igniteyourpleasure.com, and I offer two different types of sessions. One is Spark, which is a one-hour, one-time session, so you can find out more about that. And Ignite is a three-month program that I do. If you might be interested in the three-month program, you can reach out to me and get a complimentary strategy session because we want to make sure that we're a match before we work together on a longer-term program. And all this information in detail is on my website, igniteyourpleasure.com, in the sex coaching tab. And I also have programs that I'm working on, so you can please check back regularly to see what I'm up to and how we can work together.
Awesome. And any new program that you currently have in your mind that you are working on or that you're excited about?
Well, I'm working on two. So one for men. I work with a lot of guys around issues of premature ejaculation. And typically they're men that are lasting under a minute or at a minute. And, of course, there are other guys that just want to last longer. And, you know, I think the real thing is it's premature ejaculation. If it's more premature, then you want it to be. So I'm going to be working on something like that that will be more accessible to people, that will be more of a group program probably. I have a couple different formats that I'm thinking about, and I'm working on another one that's probably at this point geared more towards women. I might change it a little bit to make it more inclusive, but basically it's going to be a sexual empowerment and confidence program, being able to help people, to help women in particular, about being able to have orgasm, to feel great in their body, and to really just work and feel great, I should say, in their body, and just really own their sexuality. So those are two things. They're really based on my, you know, usually when I work with people, there's topics that we cover tons of different topics, and there's different things that come up for different people because the program itself, the Ignite program, and the Spark one too, is very specialized to people's needs and tailored to people's needs. But the reality is that I want people to be able to get the help that they need. So the common topics are women who've never had an orgasm, guys with premature ejaculation, couples that are in sex ruts where things have just been so routine, or everything else is so great in their relationship, but their sex life is, you know, it's suffering a bit. And the bottom line is that anyone that I work with might not know how to get to where they want to be, but they know that they want it to be different, and they're committed to that change. So you check out my site for the upcoming release.
That's awesome. Everybody, go to igniteyourpleasure.com and check out Amy's programs and coaching and so on. Well, listen, thanks again, Amy, for being here. We really appreciate it. It was an enlightening and fun and I think pretty healthy conversation. And again, hope all of you enjoyed it out there. If you know someone who would enjoy listening to this and could learn something from it and would benefit by this, We encourage you to share it with them. And if you'd like to know what I'm up to, you can always go to BrentSmithLifestyle.com. Thanks again, Amy. Thanks, Jason. And we will see you all later.